Can the power balance of Congress be affected by a redistricting fight in just one state? How does that work and why? I'm Lisa Loving with Community Report, Brad Friedman of The Bradcast, and David Daly of FairVote.org took a deep dive on the history of gerrymandering in Texas that illuminates the nuts and bolts of the current redistricting showdown between Democrats and Republicans. Here are Brad Friedman and David Daly.
As gerrymandering and redistricting author and expert David Daly explained last week at Washington Post, they were two of the closest congressional races in the country this past November. In Texas's 34th district between Brownsville and Corpus Christi, Democrat Vicente Gonzalez won by just more than 5,100 votes. Just to the west in the 28th district, which runs between San Antonio and the Mexican border, voters reelected Democrat Henry Cuellar by less than 5 percentage points. Democratic dreams of recapturing the U.S. House begin with retaining seats such as those. But next fall, those districts might look different, at least if Governor Abbott has his way in another mid-decade redistricting set for this week's special session of the state legislature. If Texas Republicans gerrymander themselves additional advantages on a congressional map that they already control, 25-12, writes Daly, the stakes will reverberate beyond South Texas. A map that turns blue seats red before anyone casts a midterm ballot could put the House beyond reach for Democrats in 2026. President Donald Trump is pushing for the extra cushion, and if it happens, notes Daly, this will be one more gift delivered to the GOP by Chief Justice John Roberts and the Supreme Court. Joining us now for insight on all of this is David Daly, the man who wrote the book, literally several of them, in fact, on gerrymandering. Beginning with his notorious 2016 book, whose title I cannot say on FCC radio, so we just call it Rat Flipped, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy, and last year's Anti-Democratic, Inside the Right's 50-Year Plan to Control American Elections. David is a senior fellow at FairVote.org, and prior to that, he served as editor-in-chief at Salon, where, full disclosure, he was my editor for a number of years. Oh, David Daly, it has been a while, but welcome back to the Bradcast, sir.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Great to be here. I mean, you know, except that you always have me on whenever there's a gerrymander going on, so yeah. I guess not great to be here.
Correct. Whenever you are here, things are terrible, David. Congratulations. Now,
You get that at parties, too.
Yeah, I bet you do. Now, am I remembering that Tom DeLay 2003 mid-decade redistricting story correctly? Because at the time, if I recall, it was really the biggest and only story in the political world for a few weeks because it was such a rare perhaps unprecedented occurrence at the time to carry out a second redistricting mid-decade.
You know, what's amazing about that story is I believe it actually takes place in 2005. So it's a little bit more shocking of a mid-decade redistricting. Okay. Republicans had wanted to take over Texas for some time. Of course, it had been trending in that direction over many years throughout the 90s, but it took them until the 2004 election to really consolidate control over the entire state. You still had plenty of Democrats in the legislature there. You often had a Democratic governor over sometimes the 1990s in Texas. And so Tom DeLay couldn't really get his hands on this process until 2005, truly in the middle of the decade, exactly 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the 20-year anniversary gift for the DeLay gerrymander is, in fact, another gerrymander.
Right. And it's the gift that keeps on giving. Now, not only is Texas doing this, but in response to what Texas is planning to do, it seems, a number of Democratic states are considering doing the same thing, which we will discuss in a bit. But the redrawing of congressional maps, it typically happens only at the beginning of the decade. It follows the census every 10 years to reflect, changing populations and demographics. But Is that a law, or is that simply a tradition, a norm that really it could happen anytime lawmakers want it to?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, really, in some ways, it is a American political norm that we only gerrymander once a decade. And now all of the norms are being broken and politicians feel free to gerrymander, multiple times in a decade.
So there's no law, there's no national law, there's no federal law.
Every state covers this a little bit differently.
Okay.
Some states prohibit a mid-decade redistricting, and others are silent on it. And whenever you're silent on something these days, that is a big old loophole to drive a truck through.
You noted last week, David, that the Texas GOP reportedly has two possible mid-decade plans in mind here. One that would gain an extra seat or two, and a more aggressive option that might net as many as four or five seats next year, flipping from blue to red in Texas. Obviously, that's the one Trump is calling for, as the session just convened on Monday. Do we have any idea yet of how far this particular scheme will reach in Texas?
We don't. We haven't really seen any draft maps out of the Texas legislature yet. There was a map circulating over the weekend in Texas political circles that was a very aggressive gerrymander, but it turns out that that was a plan submitted by someone in the public. Could well have been a trial balloon. Republicans in Florida, many other states, are known to use the public submission portal as a sock puppet for their own most extreme plans. So this could be a map that they're circulating, but we don't know. I mean, right now, you have a 25-12 delegation in Texas, and there's one safe Democratic seat that is vacant. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about Texas is there's plenty of room for Republicans to try any number of maneuvers here. The lines that they drew back in 2021 were certainly a gerrymander, but they were really reinforcing last decade's gerrymander. This was essentially, let's lock in our incumbents, let's protect against the kind of demographic change that you see in Texas every decade, let's play it safe. Politicians like safe districts. Mm-hmm. Politicians love getting reelected with 65% of the vote. And so of the 25 Republicans in Texas, 24 of them get reelected with either more than 60% of the vote, or they don't even have a challenger at all. The closest Republican won in 2024, 57 and change to 42 and change. So that's still 15 points. Mm-hmm. 13 of those races were either uncontested or won with more than 65%. So these are some very, very safe districts with lots of surplus votes that Republicans could easily take to. They could probably increase that by several more and still be relatively safe from having these maps backfire in a wave year. It would have to be the kind of wave we've never seen before, and it would have to hit in rural Texas.
And I want to talk about that in a bit, this concept of dummy mandering, which you speak about in a detailed story this week at Salon. But let me just, there's nothing at this point, either legally or really even politically, that can stop Texas Republicans from doing this as they see fit. Democrats, for example, they don't have enough members, even in the state legislature at this point, to prevent a quorum as they did back in 2005, correct?
That's right. Pretty much this is down to the morality and the conscience of individual Republicans.
Oh, boy. Then we're really in trouble. Now, the Texas Republicans and Donald Trump's corrupted Justice Department, they're arguing that the move in Texas is necessary legally because of concerns that the current maps are unconstitutional, and they are themselves right now racially gerrymandered. Any truth to that? What's your response to that?
Oh, boy. You know.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
This is, you know, it's always a delight to me to see exactly when it is that Republicans and a Republican Department of Justice get upset about gerrymandering. And it tends to be when they think that districts might actually be drawn that give somebody other than a white dude a chance of winning.
Uh-huh.
And that is pretty much what the case is here.
Yeah.
Republicans have used race to slice and dice this entire state. They have, it's wild because there's really two different forms of gerrymandering, right? There's partisan gerrymandering and there's racial gerrymandering. And back mm-hmm. in 2019, the US Supreme Court said partisan gerrymandering is just fine. We're not going to stop you. Go ahead and do it to your heart's delight. Racial gerrymandering remains unconstitutional, and there's Voting Rights Act prohibitions as well as the Reconstruction Amendments that will get in your way if that is what you want to do. But now you can do good old-fashioned racial gerrymanders and just say that you're doing a partisan gerrymander.
Uh-huh.
So that's what they did in Texas. They drew plenty of racial gerrymanders in Texas in 2021, mm-hmm. and they called them partisan gerrymanders.
Right.
And when people sued and said, you're doing a racial gerrymander here in Texas, they said, no, we just did a partisan gerrymander. And now that they want to go back in and do this again, they're saying, well, this is a racial gerrymander and we have to fix it.
But it's right. It's racially gerrymandered to help minorities. It's like flipping everything on its head and flipping the law on its head.
They made the exact opposite argument a couple of years ago. These maps are what they're up to in Texas is trying to draw a racial gerrymander that puts white Republicans back in charge. For time immemorial. Mm-hmm. That is truly the goal here.
So while this is reportedly being done at the request, at the demand, really, of Donald Trump, who may see the writing on the wall for next year's midterm elections and a potential blue wave that could take away the GOP's very thin current majority in the U.S. House. But some Democrats are suggesting that this scheme by Texas Republicans could backfire in what is now known apparently as a dummy-mander, which I had not yet heard of until I read your writing about it. But you wrote about this at Salon This Week in Detail. Explain that term, dummy-mander, if you could, and then we'll talk about whether Democrats should be counting on that to happen or not.
Sure. A dummy-mander, it's a great term. It was coined by a couple of political scientists back in 2000. And five, including Bernie Grofman, Tom Brunel, really smart folks on redistricting.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, a dummy-mander is a gerrymander that backfires. Whenever you are gerrymandering, you have to decide between the number of seats you want to win
mm-hmm.
and the margin at which you are comfortable winning.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a state with seats and you want to go for all five of those seats, you're likely going to have to spread your voters out pretty far. You're going to have to draw a bunch of 53, 47 districts,
mm-hmm.
right? And in a wave year, your map might backfire. You might lose seats.
Because the margin you've drawn in that particular district is not as large as it was. You're playing with fire there by spreading the voters out a little bit more to try and pick up another seat in another district.
But if you were to draw a 4-1 map,
uh-huh.
you would still win the gerrymander, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would still take 4 out of 5 seats, but you would do so comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a question between how greedy really do you want to be? And that's the question in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That some Democrats are asking. They're asking, is it possible that Republicans will be so greedy that they will tip some of these districts toward the Democrats? The answer to that is no.
Which is, and which you write about in detail, that it's not going to happen. And I'll let you explain why here, but I'm wondering if that is still true, because we're dealing with congressional districts that have already been maximally gerrymandered in many cases, as some people believe, and Democrats believe anyway that they're heading for a blue wave election in the House next year. So if they make those margins smaller for Republicans in Texas, couldn't that mean that even in places like Texas, it ends up flipping more seats, in fact, from red to blue than expected?
The problem with that is that there's only one district in Texas that the Republican wins with support in the 50s. Mm-hmm. All of the other districts are in the 60s. More than half of them are over 65% or uncontested. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking here about drawing a whole bunch of 53, 47 districts that could maybe flip. Mm. We're talking about taking some of these 65 or 70% Republican districts, mm-hmm, and maybe making them 59, 60, 61 districts. So then you would still need a D plus 12 wave to hit in rural Texas.
Wow.
That is asking an awful lot. Democrats are talking about dummy manders, not because they think it's actually going to happen, but because they have no other ability to stop this except to try to scare them. And this is not going to scare Republicans because they've got the best map makers on the planet. Not a single Republican map has backfired in a single election in any Republican gerrymandered state in the modern era of redistricting ever since technology and voter data supercharged these lines. It hasn't happened once anywhere. Mm. The lines are too strong. The map makers are too good and too smart and too specific and too precise. If Democrats are counting on Republicans to enact a dummy mander, the dummies are them.
Wow. All right. Well, there's another way that Democrats can push back in response to what Texas is doing now. And by the way, Ohio may be doing something similar. They may end up adding two more Republican seats to their state delegation. But in response to all this, Democrats are now looking at doing the same thing. Mid-decade redistricting, gerrymandering in states that they control, like California, New York, New Jersey, Minnesota, Washington State, Illinois, etc. Now, politically, never mind the voters for a second, Dave Daley, wouldn't Democrats be absolutely right to do so? Wouldn't it be political malfeasance at this point to not do so in those states, as sleazy as that may feel to folks like you and me who are actually interested in, you know, democracy and voting rights and such?
I think that's a complicated question with a complicated answer, and I had a feeling we'd wind up here.
Uh-huh.
It is not that Democrats are redistricting angels. Democrats, after the political incompetence of the 2010 election and getting caught completely flat-footed by the Republican plan to win state legislatures and remap the nation and hold control through gerrymandering, they, you know, caught on to this, you know, in the middle of the last decade. They finally woke up. The Supreme Court decision made them fully aware that these kinds of gerrymanders were not going to be stopped anywhere.
Let me clarify. The Supreme Court decision essentially that said, hey, federal courts, stay out of redistricting. Leave this to state courts. It's none of our business. They can do whatever they want, and they can fight it out in their home states, essentially.
Exactly.
That. Okay.
You can fight it out in your home states in front of your Leonard Leo-appointed judges there.
Right.
Good luck with that, Florida and Texas.
Right.
So Democrats drew pretty good gerrymanders. In Illinois, they drew a 14-3 gerrymander. They drew gerrymanders in Oregon, in New Mexico. They did not go as far as they might have in New York, but they certainly drew themselves, a handful of seats after they pushed back against the independent commission maps that were drawn. There's not an awful lot remaining on the table for Democrats. They've already taken a lot of this, right? Texas is able to do this because Texas left this on the table in case they needed it, right? Texas was the break glass in case of emergency. And now Republicans are pulling out the hammer. In a lot of ways, Democrats have done what they can do. They maximize their gains. I would even suggest they're overextended on the current map. There's 37 competitive districts that were within 5% in the 24 election. Democrats won 22 of those already. So they're already holding on to a lot of the really slippery seats. So it would be, they could try to draw an 8-0 map in Maryland. They could attempt to draw 15-2 or 16-1 in Illinois. You're starting to hear New Jersey's governor rumble about that. I believe it's a 9-3 map in New Jersey right now. But New Jersey was heading the other direction in that, in the 24 election. Those races were getting closer there, not farther.
Well, it seems to me, though, that if Democrats can pick up even one, seat in each of these states, given the narrow margin in the House right now, ultimately,
Well, I would suggest that it's the Democrats that would risk a dummy mander,
right,
in this case. If Democrats thought that they could draw an 8-0 map in Maryland safely, they would have done so in 2011 and again in 2021. I mean, I've read the emails that they sent, that, Martin O'Malley's team sent around when he was governor 15 years ago. They thought about it. They drew those maps. They tried it. And then they ultimately said, no, bad idea. So if you go for 10-2 in New Jersey, do you risk it going 8-4? You might.
Well, you know what, David? You might. But at this point, I think we talked about this back in 2020 or so. I'm completely uncomfortable making this argument. But at this point, what do Democrats have to lose? I mean, if the choice is being in the minority anyway.
What you have to lose is that your 14-3 gerrymander becomes a 12-5 gerrymander in Illinois. You lose seats in the states where you're counting on them.
So there's a possibility that could end up being a case where they might have otherwise won a narrow majority in the U.S. House, but for their own, as you call it, dummy manders there?
It's not impossible, right? I mean, it's not that Democrats did not try to gerrymander the states that they control as fully and safely as they could back in 2021. So there's not much on the table. If they go in and do that, I think in many ways it's hard not to blame them. I think all of this is just a disastrous race toward the bottom, and it's a race toward
it is. I totally agree with you, and I think because you and I have talked many times over the years about this. I'm not comfortable calling for gerrymandering in any way, but I look at this and I see the loss of the Democratic majority in the U.S. House has resulted in an extraordinary amount of pain for millions of Americans of all parties, loss of health care, food assistance, cancer research, for crying out loud, just to name a few examples. So it really does become an interesting, political versus moral, ethical question about all of this. How far should they go if they think it might help them to pick up the majority, and it's one I suspect we'll continue to discuss, because I got to get out here, but I want to ask you one last question here, David, and it's sort of an annoying question that I used to be asked a lot when appearing on other people's shows discussing concerns about voting and voting systems and so forth. If you were the king of democracy at this point, and I know that's a contradiction in terms, but just go with me here, David. If you could pave the way to prevent this sort of thing from happening by implementing a scheme to serve voters instead of partisan politicians when it comes to, you know, districting maps, what would you do? I mean, and how would or should all of this be done fairly in a better small D democratic nation?
Listen, we have a gerrymandering problem because we have a single member district problem. And the ultimate solution to gerrymandering is proportional representation. And if we were to move from a system in which we elect members from single districts, mm-hmm. in which the lines are the only thing that determine winners and losers, and at this point, the lines don't lose, the lines always win. We need to shift to larger multi-member districts and proportional ranked choice voting to elect members. This very week, we see that Jamie Raskin and Don Beyer have reintroduced the Fair Representation Act in the U.S. House that would do exactly that. Larger multi-member districts and members elected within those districts with a ranked choice voting. When you do that, gerrymandering melts away, and it doesn't just melt away in red states or in blue states, it melts away everywhere. Every district becomes a swing district. Every state has blue seats and red seats and maybe green seats and libertarian seats or independent seats. I think you would see a real flowering, right? I mean, I'm talking to you in Massachusetts, where we have a 9-0 Democratic majority, all safe seats. This is not a 9-0 Democratic state. If you were to turn this into three multi-member districts, you might get six Democrats, two Republicans, and one member of the mm-hmm. Green. If you were to do this in Tennessee, which has been gerrymandered to an 8-1 Republican advantage, you might get six Republicans and three conservative Southern Democrats. Wouldn't Congress work better if we had some New England Republicans again? Southern Democrats, some folks who could talk to one another.
And to be clear, that's
all. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's instead of one member of Congress from one district, you might have three or four representing that district. Can that be done? And I'm with you on proportional representation, David. I'm not a fan, as I think you may recall, of ranked choice voting. Can that be done? Can proportional representation be done without RCV, without ranked choice voting?
There's different ways of doing proportional representation. There's the party list method. I mean, I think when you're filling multiple seats, you need some form of ranked choice voting. And I think you're probably not on board entirely with single winner ranked choice. But when you look at what ranked choice does in a proportional system, you know, it's pretty much the best, most proven way to go. I think there's you know, a different way of looking at it. Maybe we could get you on board with that.
All right, the negotiations will continue, David.
Hope so. This has been going on for many years.
Yes.
So
yes.
Perhaps there's a way that.
But I like the proportional representation. That sounds.
I thought
good
you
to
might
me.
Like
yeah.
that piece.
As we might have to build a bigger capital, but I'm okay with that too. David, I got to get out. David Daly is the senior fellow at fairvote.org. He is also the author of many great books on, unfortunately, on gerrymandering and redistricting. You can find him at the Blue Skies at Dave Daly, spelled D-A-L-E-Y. Thanks, David. Always great speaking with you, sir.
You too, Brad. Thanks.
You bet.
That was David Daly of fairvote.org with Brad Friedman of The Bradcast, produced by Desi Doyen out of KPFK in Los Angeles, California. You can listen to the entire interview online at bradblog.com. For the Pacifica Radio Network, I'm Lisa Loving.
I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
On the next episode of NeuroEmergent, I talk with Leah Blankenship, founder of the Neurodiversity Alliance at the University of Oregon. Go Ducks!
One thing I hear from so many of my ADHD students all the time is, like, if I hear